Hello, all you Lifebook members out there. Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning into the Lifebook Member Podcast. I hope you're having an incredible time in the middle of Health and Fitness Month, sticking to your New Year's resolutions, I hope, staying strong, living the Lifebook lifestyle, 12 category smart. I love it. Today's episode is going to be a powerful one for health and fitness. I have the perfect guest on the line to talk about today's topic, using food as medicine. Our guest is a nutrition specialist. He's a natural wellness expert. He's the co-founder of Level One Diagnostics. Dr. Stephen Hellshine is on the line. How you doing, Dr. Steve?
Never been better, my friend. And you?
Doing excellent. I'm so happy to be working with you. For the listeners who don't know, Dr. Hellshine is also known as Dr. Coffee, and he is my part-time co-host on the Coffee Health and Science podcast, which I want to mention is a perfect resource for Health and Fitness Month. It's a free podcast. You can find it everywhere, Spotify, iTunes. We talk about longevity, we talk about coffee, we talk about health science. I think you guys will love that. And Dr. Steve, I want to thank you for contributing so much to that show and really, you know, not just reshaping the world's view on coffee and health, but the whole field of natural wellness and food as a medicine. You do great work, my friend. So thank you.
Jordan, thank you for thanking me. I really appreciate it. As you know, I try and give out the truth. Try and cut through the murkiness, as we're going to do today, and give out the truth so people can make wise decisions about what they put in their body from a health standpoint.
I love it. So today we are talking about, like I said, letting food be thy medicine, that famous quote from Hippocrates. Before we jump into this topic, though, Dr. Steve, can you give a little bit of history on how you got into the field of health and then eventually this field of natural wellness?
Well, it goes back many, many years. When I had graduated from college, I got into a PhD program at Catholic University in biochemistry. I was there. I was very unhappy. It was not a great fit for me. It was a lot of publish or perish. A lot of sitting and writing grants, and I wasn't feeling like I was getting things I needed to out of my education. And I saw a bulletin from the White House that the Surgeon General was giving a lecture on Chinese medicine. Nixon had just sent his guy over to China. It was a big coup. They had broken the Chinese wall, and they had a discussion, and the Surgeon General went over, and he brought back a film showing three people having one surgery of the brain, one surgery for something else, and one delivering a baby, all using these needles as anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And I heard the lecture, and I came home that night and said to Robin, I said, okay, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm going to go find out how to learn Chinese medicine.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking way back in the day before computers, before when you really had to write letters still.
Right.
And one thing led to the other. I wound up going through chiropractic school. I wound up getting a postgraduate in nutrition. I wound up getting a postgraduate in homeopathy, Ayurvedic medicine, naturopathy, acupuncture. I really immersed myself into all the natural wellness modalities, physical therapy, and came out of it at really the beginning of holistic medicine. And we've now seen it go from holistic to alternative to complementary. Now I think they call it
functional.
Integrative medicine.
Integrative, yes.
Function. Yeah. So I've been through it, through all of them, and have maintained the integrity of not selling out to the system and really trying to provide true information so people can empower themselves. You know, the term doctor is supposed to be teacher. Physician,
right,
is supposed to be a teacher. And so our ministry, to use that term, is always about education. Educating people so they can make the right decisions.
It's incredible. It's absolutely right. Talk to me about your view of this whole situation and how it's shifted over the decades. I feel like we're really headed in the right direction. This concept of using food as a medicine, functional medicine, turning more towards natural wellness, diet and exercise, not just running right to the pharmaceuticals or right to the quick fix, but taking this holistic approach. What do you think of all this, and do you think we're headed in the right direction?
We are headed in the right direction, and we're absolutely headed in the wrong direction. And let me explain what I mean by that. So if I look at charts over the last 20 years of weight, a person's weight, then we see that obesity and diabetes, which you've heard me term before in our podcast, diabesity,
right,
is epidemic. It now is to the portion that every state is afflicted by diabesity. So when I say we're headed in the right direction and the wrong direction, what I mean by that, Jordan, is that our modern diets, with their heavy inclusions of simple carbohydrates, cause multiple problems for the body. And we're getting heavier, and we're wearing out our insulin receptors. And
as a whole, as a nation, right?
Yeah, financially, as a nation, we are going to break the healthcare piggy bank in 10 years with the amount of people who are diabetic. So the fact that people are hearing more about using food as medicine, unfortunately, that's a great path to follow, but only if you clean up your dietary act first. So you can't have a baseline of crap and then use food as medicine. So if you're 350 pounds and your blood sugar is 400 and your blood pressure is 200 over 120, then all the spirulina in the world is not going to make you better.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And so that's the problem that we need to make sure people realize, is that they need to not only improve the foundation, but then use food as a medicine on top of that.
Yeah. So while there's still so much groundbreaking going on, there's so many people trending towards this, on a large scale as a whole, it kind of seems like our food production system and our American diet is really the major problem. And like you said, it's just trending worse and worse until there has to be eventually a tipping point where we figure this out as a nation through education, through programs of some kind to get this under control, this diabetes epidemic, which is a word that gets thrown around a lot now. But this is a true, true epidemic. I mean, it's some of the leading cause of death in the nation all contributes from diabetes, right?
Absolutely. And I'll make it even simpler. So our modern diet, as I said, which has a heavy inclusion of simple carbohydrates, this causes an overall acidification of our bodies. It also wears out our insulin receptors, so that the environment that our microbes live in, and remember, you have to digest your food, and for that digestion, not only do you need live enzymes to digest, but you need the microbes in the gut
to be
able to thrive and multiply. And the example I always give is that if you... Now, no animal was harmed in this. This is just make-believe. But if you go to the store and you get a goldfish and you come home and every day you add a teaspoon of Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola, I'll give equal rights to both of them, to the mix, every day just keep adding one teaspoon, eventually that fish is going to die.
Right.
The environment that they're living in is now toxic to them. And we are making our internal environment toxic to us.
And the microbiome is so important to our health too. I'm learning on the show, on the Coffee Health and Science podcast. That's a really good point.
Absolutely. And the microbiome what that really means is it means the environment of your internal digestive organisms. Mm-hmm. So it means the bacteria, the virus, the enzymes, the probiotics, the prebiotics, Whoa. The postbiotics.
It's a whole ecosystem.
You know, everything has a term, but all those terms, what they really mean is that they're making up the environment in your gut for digestion, the microbiome.
Right. Listeners can look forward to a microbiome specialist coming for Emotional Month, Dr. Steve. We're going to talk about specifically how it affects our emotions, which is going to be really fascinating. But you brought up soda specifically. I mean, I am a very lay person. I always ask this of my guests, but if you had to say the number one issue in America, I know inactivity is high on your list, but would you say it's the soda consumption? It seems to me like no other country on the planet has that huge liquid sugar calorie intake that we do, and no one else really has the same obesity epidemic that we do.
You know, if you ever get a chance to really bring on a nutritional historian,
ooh, that's a great
who really
idea.
Knows their stuff better than me, then they would be able to tell you in much more glowing terms about what our Surgeon General and the science community did to the American people when somewhere in the 60s or 50s they decided to have the war on fat.
Yes.
So up to that point, we had a diet that, because of refrigeration and because of pasteurization, up to that point was really a diet in good fats. Mm-hmm. We had real butter, we had real milk with cream in it, and then things changed. And when things changed, we started taking in more fats. And then because, you know, fats help with hunger satiety.
Yeah.
Fats make you feel fuller. So when you are eating less fat and you're eating the wrong kind of fat, then you get hungry. And when you're being told by the government that fat is evil, then you have to replace something for taste. And what do you turn to? You turn to sugar.
Right.
And so if we look at the downward slope of fats on a curve, we're going to see the rise of sugar on the curve.
And the rise of obesity. Ever since we cut out all that stuff, you know, margarine instead of butter, all that stuff, we've just gotten fatter and fatter, it seems.
Exactly, we have. And so that ties in, and that's why I said if you get a nutritional historian and who can really show you the charts and talk to you about the rise of diabetes along with the rise of sugar consumption and the decline of fat usage and the increase in fats that were more plastics like margarine rather than butter, then all of a sudden you have a very fat population that's growing and growing bigger and bigger and becoming more acidic and becoming more microbiome unfriendly, and now digestion is not happening right. And then we've changed our practices of farming. So you might want to get somebody who's also a biblical scholar on one day to talk about the rules concerning farming in the Bible.
And how we've broken them and now our soil is trash?
Not only is our soil is trash, but you know, some will argue that the whole gluten problem now is because of cross-contamination from the way we're growing crops. So
that's fascinating.
In the Bible, if you're in Israel and you're following Jewish law, the Bible is telling you how to rotate crops,
right,
and how many years and what year you let it lay fallow. And so you're supposed to replenish the soil, et cetera, et cetera. And we're not doing that. Instead, we're dumping lots of chemicals into the soil to make it more healthy, supposedly, for growing foods. And so we have cross-contamination, and now you've got this real gluten intolerance affecting society that was nowhere like this.
Yeah, it didn't even exist. That's what fascinates me. Yeah, exactly. And Steve, we could do a whole episode on the incredible relationship between soil microbes and food production, and then our food consumption and human microbes in the microbiome. That's really one of the running narratives on the Coffee Health and Science podcast, is we have natural farmers on talking about the health of plants grown in natural microbe-friendly soil. And then we have Dr. Marvin Singh on talking about our health being determined by our microbiology. It's really, really fascinating, and you're 100% right. But that's a digression from what we're talking about today. I want to swing back around to what you said, which is before you start diving into all of these different food medicines, it's crucial to get the, let's just say it, poison out of your diet. Kick that soda, you know, stop the junk food. That is really a number one. Would you agree with that statement?
I absolutely would agree with the fact that refined carbohydrates are a villain and need to be completely eliminated from the diet. So anything you're going to eat, if you look at it and it has added sugar to it, it's better to pass on that and to change it for fruits and vegetables.
And that's the thing. If you take a look at the wildest health food trends, vegan, paleo, carnivore, all of them say avoid processed foods. All of them say avoid sugar. That we can all agree on, right?
Yep.
Yeah, 100%. I wanted to focus on two supplements today, though. Health food supplements that you are a specialist on. Of course, we're going to do coffee, but we're not going to start with that one. We're going to start with something that I've wanted to talk to you about for so long, Dr. Steve, because I don't think you even know how it's played into my life. I'm talking about apple cider vinegar.
One of my favorite topics.
Man, I'm so stoked to talk to you about it because I have my own personal story with it, but I think a lot of people are familiar with it because it's so versatile for, you know, a wide variety of applications, including consumption for health. So talk to me about the benefits of apple cider vinegar, the science behind it, and how you recommend people consume it.
So, you know, we may wind up going on overtime with a longer podcast.
That's
because
fine.
There's so much information I have to share. And remember how I started this, Jordan, by saying I try and get rid of the murky?
Right.
So let me try and lay the ground for my belief and my discussion of apple cider vinegar.
Sure, please.
And that ground always starts with somebody saying to me, do I need to detox?
Mm.
And that is really a phenomenal question. So your body accumulates toxins, and they are supposed to be handled by your liver, lungs, and kidneys. Mm-hmm. There are other organs that help to detoxify, but those are the three main ones. You are supposed to be on a diet rich in protein, vegetables, and fruits that provide you all the nutrients you need.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not on a diet high in protein, vegetables, and fruits, then you are making your liver, lungs, and kidneys work harder.
Mm-hmm.
So when that occurs, you start thinking about, should I detox? And my answer to that is threefold. One, the absolute detox is to go back to a healthy diet.
Mm-hmm.
You can't simply take activated charcoal supplements just to say I'm detoxing. It's
right.
It's not gonna do it for you. The charcoal is not going to bind with all these chemicals that you're polluting yourself with and allow you to evacuate them out when you have a bowel movement. That's just not how it works. But that's how people think.
Sure.
So the second thing is we want to look at what kind of foods can we use to help us detoxify, because some of the detox diets that people are doing are dangerous for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So not all the detox that people do are healthy. And it's especially not healthy if you're not, again, setting the groundwork by having an underlying good foundation.
Yeah, baseline, right.
The second part of detox, so first is the baseline. The second part of detox is something called apple cider vinegar.
Talk to me about it. How does that play into detox?
So I had said before is that because of eating all the carbohydrates, we over-acidify our bodies.
Right.
Now, high acid level depletes energy and increases the risk of infection. There is murky writing out there that I have not gone through clinical trials on to be able to defend that says things like you cannot get cancer if you're in a alkaline.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that put forth too.
Sure. So I haven't gone through the clinical trials on that. I can't look you in the eye and say, hey, this is absolutely true. But what I can look you in the eye and say that the alkaline acid ratio should be 60-40 to 80-20, somewhere in that range. So I try and look at diet as being a 70-30 split of 70% alkaline to 30% acid ratio.
Okay.
So drinking diluted, raw, unfiltered, unpasteurized apple cider vinegar with water before meals is an easy, healthy habit most people can incorporate into their daily routine to help balance this acid-alkaline ratio.
Just that simple.
That's why it's so powerful, because if done right, and we're going to get into some of the benefits and we're going to talk about how you do it right, if done right, it makes the changes that you need change without any muss or fuss.
That's absolutely what we're looking for, these high leverage health moves where it's not going to be a life changer. You just incorporate it into your diet or into your daily routine and you'll see real health benefits. So apple cider vinegar seems to fit into that perfectly. And I do want to get to my story after we go through the benefits and how you recommend people consume it. Can you share some of the just wide myriad of health benefits that apple cider vinegar brings?
Sure. But first, let's make sure we're all on the same page with apple cider vinegar.
Sure.
So there's a concept called the mother, M-O-T-H-E-R, hello mother, hello father, the mother.
Right.
So what that means is that the apple cider vinegar is left more in its unrefined, unfiltered, and unpasteurized state.
It's got living organisms in it, right?
Yes.
That's key.
And so what you don't want to do is go get the white-looking vinegar and think that's going to do it.
Right.
That won't. It's the dark brown stuff that has strands resembling cobwebs.
Right. I hate those cobwebs, and I always force them down.
Yep. I'll give you one brand, only not that I own stock in it, but only because it's probably the most well-known. Is Bragg's.
Bragg's. Yes, I was hoping that's what you'd say.
But there are others. I mean, there are others that you can find. Hanes, I think, makes one. For that, talk to your health food store. Ask what they think is the best brand of apple cider vinegar. And when all else fails, go back to Bragg's because that's the mother of apple cider vinegar mothers.
I'm glad you said that because that's what I've been using. So that's great.
Yeah, so raw unpasteurized apple cider vinegar from organic sources contains pectin, which is a prebiotic, which is a great aid for digestive disorders. If you have an imbalance in your gut flora, where harmful bacteria exist in unnatural amounts, you need to not only have the right ones, what we call probiotics, but you also need to have something to feed the probiotics.
Exactly. So
and, food. Right. And pectin from apple cider vinegar is one of them.
That makes sense.
So before we finish this topic, let me say one other thing about apple cider vinegar. You have to drink it diluted.
Really? Why is that?
So it's way too acidic, especially to the esophagus, to take it without it being diluted.
It's pretty unpleasant, yeah. Sometimes I do a little shot of it, but yeah, adding it into water is much easier.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you that I not only don't recommend taking it straight, I'm against taking it straight.
That is interesting.
So when you dilute it, it will not burn the esophagus. And part of the problems that we're having in life is that everybody that you know says they have reflux.
Yes, true.
And so that reflux is stomach acid gurgling up into the esophagus and causing irritation and burning the esophagus. Mm. And the typical medical treatment for that is to use an anti-reflux drug.
Right.
Like an H2 blocker like Prilosec or Nexium or one of the others. But, you know, that Zantac problem with the carcinogen and Zantac, I think it was
I was going to say, some of those, yeah, some of those are pretty rough medicines.
Yeah, so so we have a problem in which we're stifling the acid production of the stomach. Now, you need acid to digest food.
Right.
So if you're using an H2 blocker to stifle acid in the stomach, then you're not digesting properly.
Mm.
And so what apple cider vinegar does is it, and people don't understand this, it's true, and I can give you the science behind it, but it helps neutralize stomach acid.
Hmm, interesting. But does it not slow down digestion the same way?
Well, it speeds up digestion because
of the hydrochloric acid content and stuff?
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
So what we want to do is put the stomach into a milder acidic environment where it still is digesting, but not cut out acid production.
That's incredible.
So people that actually have heartburn will get benefits from apple cider vinegar, but not if they take it undiluted.
Mm, I see. That's the kind of thing that I need to know. And this is all really shining a lot of light on my situation. I'm just going to share my story really quick, Dr. Steve. I was getting these mystery headaches and I went to my functional medicine specialist and he changed my life. I did a simple blood test at a lab and then he looked at it under a functional scope instead of a, you know, traditional pathological. If you're already in the range, then you have the pathology, is how he described it. Again, this is coming from a layperson, so... But point is, he looked at my results. He saw that I was functionally anemic, even though I have a very rich diet of grass-fed meats. And the reason that I was anemic is because I didn't have enough hydrochloric acid. And I was getting these headaches because I needed to supplement my body with hydrochloric acid. I would have never figured this out on my own. So I started with an apple cider vinegar, water, and lemon juice drink in the morning. And in 3 days, my headaches were gone and my energy levels were completely turned around. It was totally life-changing, and apple cider vinegar has been a staple for me ever since then.
That's a great story. And, you know, it's not a news story for hear it all the time from people. And lemon juice is a good additive. I recommend a dose of 2 to 3 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar a day in a glass of water before meals or whenever an episode of heartburn might occur.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recommend that a person take more than about 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar a day. I think that's okay. The sweet spot.
I'm glad you said that because I, of course, had the mentality, if this stuff is good for me, then I'm going to... I wasn't even measuring. I was like sloshing it into my morning drink. I don't still do that. I do lighter doses now, but I'm glad you gave out measurements because I was, of course, going for the attitude. This stuff's good for me, right? Well, then we'll just dump it in.
Yes, it always has to be diluted because if it's not diluted enough and it's still too acidic, it'll burn the esophagus. So
right.
Let's talk about digestion. You go to, you know, a fast food drive-in and you get your cup of soda, and the cup of soda has a lid on top of it and it's got a straw.
Mm-hmm.
So the straw is what part of the body?
The esophagus.
The cup is what part of the body?
Let's say the stomach.
The soda is what part of the body?
Our stomach acids.
And what about the lid?
That's our that's the thing that girds acts up, that little valve.
Yeah, so the lid is your diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
And that little hole with the crosshairs where the straw goes through, that's called your diaphragmatic hiatus.
Mm, interesting.
And it's a muscle. And if it gets to be too weak of a muscle or too loose of a muscle or too big of a hole, then you get stomach acid flushing up. Picture squeezing the cup and watching the soda go up into the straw.
Right.
And that straw, the esophagus, is just intolerant to acid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when it gets burned, so using the apple cider vinegar. Anyway, what other things does apple cider vinegar do, you asked me? Thanks for asking me. It helps type 2 diabetes. Studies reveal that vinegar leads to buffering of blood sugar levels even after indulging in a heavy carbohydrate meal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me because, that's when you feel it the most, when you're unable to digest. And I've found that apple cider drink clears up that feeling. I think that this might be a really life-changing episode for people who struggle with that feeling. Maybe they're overeaters like me. You know, you can't resist that late-night cheeseburger. And you just feel that heavy feeling the next day. Your stomach is full and unable to process. That apple cider vinegar and lemon concoction blows right through that for me.
Apple cider vinegar can help reduce fasting blood sugar by about 4%.
Whoa, fasting blood sugar?
Yep.
Interesting. So the diabetes part is there. That's really incredible.
Yeah. We did a study where we gave a patient white bread and vinegar, and not all people consume the same level of vinegar. The ones that were given vinegar with a low level of acetic acid and others with a high level of acetic acid, and the results showed that those given with a higher level of acetic acid were found to feel fuller than other participants.
Whoa.
And that their blood sugar fasting the next morning was decreased by 4%.
So they were able to gain more sustenance from the food, even though it was just bread? Is that what that means?
You feel fuller.
Whoa. You feel fuller. That's really interesting.
Yep. What else does it do? I remember when my kid was young and he started getting some acne.
I was going to say, yeah, yes, please go ahead.
So the bacteria I felt was the culprit for his acne. And so I gave him both apple cider vinegar to take orally, internally, and I also made up a dilution of apple cider vinegar for his skin.
Right.
Very dilute, but enough that it really cleared up his skin in no time.
Yeah, that's incredible. I that just reminded me of two uses that just popped into my head. A family member had warts, just little like simple plantar warts or whatever on their finger. A cotton mm-hmm. ball full of apple cider vinegar taped to the finger for like a few days and it was gone.
Yep.
And then I just remembered an incident that I had, which was I got these weird spots on my skin. They were like little spots that were appearing. It was just some skin condition. And I mixed up a recipe that I just found in some random forum because that's what this lady was saying worked for her. And it was just water, tea tree oil, and apple cider vinegar. And I sprayed it on my skin for 3 times a day and it knocked out these spots that normal ointments weren't getting rid of.
Mm.
So I think the apple cider vinegar is a big player in that. That's crazy, man. Dermatology uses, microbiome uses, digestion. I mean, this is really a versatile food medicine.
Yeah, so, you know, level one diagnostics is a cardiovascular diagnostic
program. Your practice, yeah, yeah.
And apple cider vinegar helps in increasing good cholesterol, which is HDL, and it's helped in regulating triglyceride levels.
Jeez, heart health too.
Heart health. It also acts as a natural laxative. So if you drink apple cider vinegar diluted, of course, with the mother on a regular basis, it improves bowel movements.
Interesting. And then you have some coffee with that and you got no problems.
Exactly. I think that the bowel regulation is in part because of the pectin that's in it.
So it's helping the microbiome, which helps everything function.
Correct.
Interesting.
But I also know that it's the acetic acid levels that has an alkalizing effect for the digestive system.
So interesting. I love it.
Yeah. So there's a lot to apple cider vinegar. I have a book that's supposed to come out soon called The First Hour. And in that book, there's a chapter on apple cider vinegar, or at least a short chapter that
yes.
people can read.
I love that. We will keep the Lifebook members up to date. This is going wonderfully. This episode is powerful, Dr. Steve. I'm glad that we got to rap about apple cider vinegar. I do want to talk about coffee before we wrap it up here.
Great. I would like to, too.
And here's the thing. We do a whole show on coffee. Like I said, everyone listening needs to check out the Coffee Health and Science podcast if this is a subject you're interested in, but also just for health information in general. We cover longevity, we cover exercise, and even some ancillary stuff. And you're going to hear some Lifebookers on there. Dr. Joel Wade was just on. Anyways, to fully understand the health benefits of coffee, you got to subscribe to the Coffee Health and Science podcast. But Dr. Steve, let's do an overview right now. You've got, you know, thousands of Lifebookers who are listening to you. Many of them probably already aware of what's going on in the world of coffee and health. Many of them are already aware of Purity Coffee, the company that my father, John Butcher, is involved in. Many of them probably have no idea about the health benefits of coffee. So how can you talk to these audience members and help them understand how you are reshaping how people think about coffee and health?
So we talked before about apple cider vinegar, mm-hmm. and what I really haven't talked about is the basics of nutrition. So we can live a month without food, a week without water, and about 3 minutes without oxygen.
Mm.
So when you talk about water or liquid, then every time you take that in, it's of in value to your health. I mean, you just have to do it right when it comes to liquids.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about taking water, and we haven't yet talked about healthy water. And one day, you and I should do that.
Yeah, water quality episode for sure.
Sure. So take a healthy water, and then if you want to help the digestive system, you're adding apple cider vinegar in it. If you want to turn it into an antioxidant powerhouse, the biggest bang for the buck is using a healthy coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've listened to Sanjeev Chopra before.
Yes, Lifebook
He's
graduate.
A professor of medicine, right? Former faculty dean for
Harvard
Medical Education at Harvard, right?
Right.
And so he says, I know one of his quotes really stuck with me. There is no longer any doubt that coffee offers significant health benefits.
Right. And this is the guy who's teaching the next generation of Harvard doctors. So that's a pretty powerful statement to come from him, is what you're saying.
It is. But not only that, it doesn't go far enough. Coffee as an antioxidant powerhouse, if you're drinking coffee already, which many, many people do, then by changing it to a medicinal grade coffee, you are increasing the value of what you're taking in. And if you're not drinking coffee yet, then by starting on having a cup a day at least of a medicinal grade coffee means that you're putting all this powerful, healthy antioxidant into your body, which help fight the damage to our cells by these unstable molecules known as free radicals.
Mm-hmm.
So free radicals cause inflammation in the body. And if you asked me, what is one of the few bottom line causes of all disease? My answer would be inflammation.
Right.
So coffee is anti-inflammatory, especially medicinal grade. So every time I say coffee, think medicinal grade. Because if you have a junk coffee that was ground from non-organic sources, that has mold, that's been sitting on a shelf for, you know, a year now, that's not what I'm talking
right,
about.
Treated with pesticides. Dr. Steve, you were the first person to enlighten me to this on the show. You made a big distinction, which is you think that a high-quality coffee that's not treated with pesticides is a superfood, but you also said that a low-quality coffee, and these low-quality coffee grows are, they literally are the most heavily treated crops on the planet when it comes to pesticide use. You say that that's actually a negative for your health. No one had made that distinction before, and I think that's a very important one.
So if you take a non-organic, heavily pesticided coffee, and you grind it up and you let it sit around and it gets some mold toxin in it, and you then put it into a capsule, and you then run water of non-good quality water through that capsule, you're dragging out some coffee. But what you're really dragging out is the pesticides and the mold. And that's what you're winding up drinking.
It's not even close to the same thing. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's poison. It's a toxin. And it's inflammatory rather than anti-inflammatory.
So that's a key distinction for sure. And then let's start there with these anti-inflammatory properties and the antioxidants. So much of the health benefits of coffee are stemming from these high antioxidant levels, right?
Correct. And I'd like to go through some of the things that we've been able to research that coffee can benefit.
Oh, please.
So it enhances brain function. We know that giving a person a test where they've had a good cup of coffee, their focus, concentration, cognitive function, and working memory is better.
Sure.
It reduces the risk of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So research shows that people who drink coffee on a daily basis had a 65% decreased chance of developing Alzheimer's and dementia.
Jeez.
And were 60% less likely to develop Parkinson's.
That's such a high number.
I know. And that's why Chopra was able to say what he did from coming from a Harvard medicine man. But I'm letting you know, with a full research of what's going on, that 65% decreased chance of Alzheimer's to drink good coffee, I'll do it in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
Speaking of heartbeats, an analysis of 36 studies on coffee included more than 1 million study subjects found those who regularly drank coffee were less likely to develop heart disease.
Mm.
Coffee fights cancer. According to the American Institute for Cancer Research, the antioxidants, the phytochemicals, and the phenols and nutrients in coffee all play an important role in reducing the risk of many cancers.
Woohoo, awesome. That's what I'm talking about, that disease prevention. It's incredible because people worry about that stuff. And if they can add this to their lifestyle, that's huge.
Especially when you talk about disease prevention, the biggest disease that's epidemic in our planet right now is diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And coffee has been shown to decrease the risk by as much as 50%. And this is according to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So I'm not citing airy-fairy studies. What I'm giving you is the real live. I can hang my hat on this and look at anybody in the eye and say, this is a real study.
One of the most studied foods on the planet.
It is. It's even studied by people like in medicine, Kaiser Permanente. And you don't really think in terms of HMOs getting involved right. in studies. But what Kaiser Permanente found in their medical care program in Oakland was that those who drank coffee every day can protect their liver from cirrhosis and that it can reduce the risk of liver disease.
Right. That I know is a big one.
It is. And I think you've done a podcast in the Coffee Health and Science podcast on liver, haven't you?
Whole in-depth episode that was really incredible, incredibly eye-opening. We give a lot of attention to the heart and the brain in the world of popular health, you know, kind of mainstream health science. But the liver, man, what an incredible episode that was, just shedding a light on how important it is and, you know, its history of medicine. You know, it's really incredible.
Yeah. So, again, I want to reiterate that coffee is a bank of antioxidants, phytochemicals, phenols, and nutrients. And so if we look at each of those and the part they play in health, you get a big bang for the buck with a cup of coffee because you don't have a lot of other things that have the amount of those four items
in them. Altogether, yeah.
With on top of that, coffee has caffeine, and I love caffeine. So caffeine helps suppress appetite, increases metabolism slightly, and burns fat. So guess what it does?
What's that?
It promotes weight loss.
Fights against diabetes.
It also improves sports performance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And listeners can look forward to an episode about exercise and coffee. That's one of my favorite times to consume coffee, pre-exercise. And then I even heard post-exercise is very good.
Yeah, and you and I are going to get into one of these days where we talk about high-level athletes when we do our sports performance. We're going to talk about how you time coffee.
Yes, yes, that sounds wonderful. I'm so excited for what's going on in the Coffee Health and Science podcast. Again, listeners, if you found today's episode interesting, check it out. We're going long, though, Dr. Steve. Do you want to wrap up your health benefits, and then we'll move on to selecting coffee and brewing it before we wrap it up?
Sure. So coffee helps with depression and mood. Coffee reduces the risk of eye retinal damage. It reduces the risk of multiple sclerosis. It can be a pain suppressant, and it extends your life. So a big study, I know I saved that to last, but a big study showed that people who drink 2 to 3 cups per day have a longer lifespan than those that don't. And this was at both the National Cancer Institute. It was reported in the Annals of Internal Medicine and in the Harvard Health Letter.
It's incredible. Literally reduces all-cause mortality. It's a hidden superfood if you get the medicinal stuff. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about selecting coffee. And then, like you said, making sure we don't, you know, turn it into something less than healthy with the way we brew it.
It's not only brewing it. So you have to start with a good coffee. Organic is key.
Yes.
Non-pesticides, organic, and the shelf life on it. So you want to get something that was picked and then sent off and not sitting in these containers in the heat for forever. So you want small farms.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get your beans, so beans are better than ground because once you grind it, then the oxidation starts to occur.
Yeah, it's really a delicate. Degrades the health properties of it. It's a very delicate bean.
Exactly. The oils in it can become rancid. So that's why when you're looking at ones that are ground, like I know Purity makes a K-cup, and what they're doing with their K-cup is that they're nitrogen flushing the product to try and preserve it for longer.
Reduce the oxidization, right?
And so storing your beans or important. You should put them in an opaque, airtight container. Put them in the pantry. I don't recommend freezing beans. They're very absorbent. So if you don't have an airtight container and you put them in the fridge, they're going to pick up the sulfur from eggs.
Oh, wow. Absorbent. Yeah. They're porous, huh?
They're very absorbent. That's especially, you know, the oils will absorb other smells. And you want to keep them away from moisture, heat, direct sunlight, oxygen, and odors. Mm-hmm. So put it into a nice airtight container that's opaque. Make sure and use pure water to brew coffee.
Do you use any, what kind of system do you use for your water?
Well, I love a company out of Canada called Vitev, V-I-T-E-V. People can read up on Vitev on the Level 1 Therapeutics website, L-E-V-E-L, the number one, Therapeutics. Vitev makes a great antioxidant filter for water.
Nice. So you process your water, make sure it's of the highest quality before you even start brewing.
Correct.
And then is it important to brew at a certain temperature? Make sure you don't burn your coffee?
It is. I always suggest that you get a thermometer and you want to brew between 195 and 205 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and that's really dependent upon how you brew coffee. So, here are the brewing methods. There's drip, there's Keurig, there's French press, there's steam, there's pour over or cold, pour over and cold brew.
Mm-hmm.
So those are your traditional brewing methods. I am a espresso steam fanatic.
Oh, love it.
I mean, that's how I like my coffee. I also am a cold brew fanatic.
Yeah, I like a good cold brew.
Yeah, I love cold brew because it really gets rid of the acidity. It's very low acid. And you can heat up cold brew, but you can also drink it cold. And since I drink coffee all day long, all night long,
start with
an IV in the morning, brush my teeth with coffee. Since everything is about coffee, I like cold brew because I can make it and always have it in the refrigerator.
Just another consumption method, delivery method.
Exactly. I'm not a big French press person. My daughter loves French press. You use coarsely ground coffee for French press. And you're going to put the water in and let it sit for about 4 minutes. And again, you want to have the water around 200 degrees plus or minus 5.
Mm-hmm.
Keurig is really all about convenience to me.
Right.
I don't like Keurig's polluting of our world with these non-recyclable K-cups.
Right.
I don't like Keurig where you buy stuff that's been sitting for a year. I mean, really, I forget what one science report showed, but I think it was coffee can be sitting 2 years before it's in the consumer's hands.
Yeah, because it takes so long to travel, and then it sits before it's stocked, and then you finally buy it, and it's been months or years.
Yeah. Drip brew or pour over. I forget the name of the glass beaker.
Chemex?
Chemex. I personally don't like pour-over coffee. It always tastes weak to me.
Not strong.
Or else it takes bitter to me. I mean, it's just my
It does
preference.
Taste more bitter. That's true. But let me ask you this. Is there a big health difference between any of these? Obviously, the Keurig, if it's been sitting out and ground, that's a big negative. But a pour-over versus a French press, is there going to be a massive health difference?
There isn't. People that like Chemex. I mean, Chemex makes a great cup of coffee, and people that like Chemex swear by it.
Right.
People that like French press swear by it.
Right.
Both of them use a more coarsely ground coffee. I think that takes some of the flavors out of the coffee to me. I like running steam through my finely ground coffee being the best. But again, that's personal preference. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be any health benefits. However, espresso has less caffeine in it than Chemex.
Yeah, so whatever we can do to get people drinking, you know, high quality organic coffee, I think it's a big game changer. And I think that this needs to be on people's radar. If you have a family history of dementia, and here, if you drink 3 to 5 cups of coffee, you can reduce your risk of dementia by 60%+. I mean, Dr. Steve, we need to be prescribing people this sort of thing. We need to be prescribing ourselves this sort of thing. It's time that we as humans and Americans and Lifebook members take health into our own hands. Use what we can. Use the natural means that we can. And you know, take full responsibility for our health and fitness category.
Absolutely. Don't forget, listen to the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast now.
Yes, I love that plug. That's absolutely right. No, seriously, Dr. Steve, I think that we are doing something really powerful with that show. I've never done anything like it. There's so many medical professionals that listen to that show. I recommend it to every medical professional I meet. And I just want to thank you for putting in all this work, being so passionate, and then taking the time to come on my other show for the Lifebook members and really breaking down food as a medicine. This was a pleasure, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Jordan, and to the Lifebook listeners. Have a wonderful 2020.
Before we go, though, if someone's interested in your work, where can they find you?
Level One Diagnostics, www.level, L-E-V-E-L, the number one, not O-N-E, but the number, diagnostics.com.
Fantastic. Everybody check it out. And make sure to stay tuned. We will be having lots more wonderful content coming your way for Intellectual Month and then Emotional Month. Some talk about the microbiome coming up. Very, very interesting stuff. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I appreciate each and every one of you Lifebook members. This is Dr. Stephen Hellshine and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.